Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is the show you've been wanting to see. This is Direct Impact, and this is what you're going to be talking about.
The president's FY25 budget.
Funding the genocide in Gaza. There have been 7 mass graves outside of hospitals. This is sick. This is deranged. You are a war criminal. Shame on you.
You are a warmonger. Shame on you. That's Secretary of State Anthony Blinken. I'm sure you could tell. He goes before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. And man, he is assailed, and it's repeated and repeated, and you are going to see it. I'm Rick Sanchez. Let's do it. All right, let's talk a little bit here about Anthony Blinken. I showed you a video of him. Do you remember playing the guitar at a club in Ukraine as the war continued there? I still can't believe that he actually did that. I mean, what the hell was he thinking, right? I mean, talk about insensitivity. But then again, that's his whole shtick. Like many of his predecessors at the State Department, from Henry Kissinger to Madeleine Albright, and I could go on, there have been some good ones, he's essentially paid to, I'm just going to say it, he's paid to lie and kill and start wars. Much of it at the behest of a large military contractor who he has worked for in the past and will likely work for again when this temporary gig that he has now at the White House is over. He'll go back there. They all do. Of course, he won't get that $1 million parachute if while he's at the White House, he goes against the status quo, which is why he doesn't and which is why he won't. You follow me? What that means is he lies, and his inconsistent positions on Ukraine and on Gaza and on the South China Sea and on Iran and a host of other global politics, they don't matter to him, right? They don't matter to him to do those things. Even if the whole world calls him out, he does not care. You know why he does not care? Because he knows that he will always be protected by Congress, which is corrupt, by military contractors who simply want him to start more wars so they can get more rich, and by the corporate media who will never challenge him like they're supposed to because they know that if they do challenge him, they will be fired. So here's the point. When it comes to the U.S. Secretary of State, this dude, Anthony Blinken, you just saw right there, there's no one to call him out. You know, there's no one there to call to make him accountable. And that is why I want you to see this video. That's why this video caught my attention, and that's why I want you to watch it. That's why I think it's hard not to watch it, because we've come to a point in America, in this country, where maybe the only way to challenge Anthony Blinken's dishonesty is when private citizens have to put their careers and their own bodies on the line to speak truth to power.
The need for U.S. global leadership and for cooperation with allies and partners has never been greater. The People's Republic of China is pursuing
military. Hit Russia was 6 years old! Blinken, you will be remembered as the butcher of Gaza!
You know, I'm just thinking as I'm watching this, as we look at protester after protester, call him a war criminal and a warmonger, watch his expression. And ask yourself, how would you feel if somebody came up and said that to you? If somebody came up and told you that you kill babies? I mean, I can't tell. He doesn't seem to be showing much of anything, nor is he commenting. Here, let's watch another one.
Since FY25 budget.
Funding the genocide in Gaza. There have been 7 mass graves outside of hospitals. This is sick. This is deranged. You are a war criminal. Shame on you.
That lady was literally being carried over the shoulder out of the room. I mean, you know, we have a saying in my culture. I'm Hispanic, born in Cuba and all that stuff. We have a saying in Spanish that we use a lot in Miami. It's called a hard face. We call it una cara dura, right? But when we say that somebody has a hard face, having a hard face means never being able to show what you are really feeling or doing, even if what you're doing is a horrible, horrible thing. Here's one more.
People's Republic of China.
He is a war criminal. The blood of 40,000 people is on his hands. The blood of 40,000 Palestinians is on his hands.
I mean, this is just over and over and over again. And again, my point, Manila, is, okay, I know this happens from time to time whenever they have hearings, but I think it's a special case in this case because nobody else is allowed to touch this guy. The media won't do it, the military won't do it, and Congress won't do it. The only people who can do it is just average Joes who show up at these committee hearings.
Yeah, this is obviously a systemic failure within the so-called fourth branch of government, the U.S. mainstream media. They do not hold power to account. Nobody's feet are held to the fire. Mm-hmm. So who's left to do it? Obviously, it's going to have to be citizens and protesters to spit the facts, spit the truth out there. But I'd like to point out one thing, Rick.
Yeah.
You remember when early on, I think it was still during the Trump administration, when Congresswoman Maxine Waters was giving a rally down back home in Los Angeles, where she called on Democratic supporters to, you know, go after these Republicans, the Trumpers, you know, if they're pumping gasoline, if they're at a restaurant or whatever. Well, now the shoe is on the other foot, and the Biden administration is in power. And obviously, Antony Blinken is not going to have any quiet nights because these same sets of protesters are outside of his house, from my understanding, pretty much every single day. And I think deservedly so.
He's probably thinking, as I mentioned a little while ago, What do I got? Maybe another half a year of this stuff, and then I can go back and work at Raytheon once again or any of those companies. I mean, because that's what they do. I mean, that's what they do. That's just the way the system works right now. And it's shameful that it works that way, but it is what it is. By the way, I've always believed that defiance, my thought, defiance, like what we saw right there, that's courage. That's true. We are always calling people heroes and stuff. That's courage, you know, and it can come in many forms. Let me show you another. Greenberg Call, and her name is Lily, is an assistant chief of staff in the Department of Interior. She was appointed by the president himself, President Biden. But she's quitting because of the ridiculous comments that she says the president has made about Jews. She's Jewish herself, by the way. This is the comment that she is talking about that bothers her.
Folks, were there no Israel, there wouldn't be a Jew in the world who was safe.
Were there no Israel, there'd be no Jew in the world that is safe. Here's what she says. Read with me. Here's what Greenberg Call is saying about Biden's comment that made her angry as a Jewish American. Quote, he is making Jews the face of the American war machine. And that is so deeply wrong because so many of her ancestors were killed by state-sponsored violence. You know, she seems, Manila, to be saying two things here. She seems to be saying, one, that what Israel is doing is not making Jews safer. It's making being Jewish in the world more dangerous. And two, she seems to be comparing our foreign policy and that of Israel to what happened in Germany and other parts of the world when Jews were slain for simply being Jews, for being different. What do you think?
Yeah, as we know, with World War II, there's been a lot of comparisons to that episode of history with Gaza currently, back and forth, depending on what side that you're on. But one thing is clear here is that she says, she is a Jewish woman.
Correct.
Saying we don't want Joe Biden to use us as your scapegoat as to why you continually support the war efforts in Gaza and continuing to arm Bibi Netanyahu's government. Now, I think it's an important note to make here, Rick. Her last name is Greenberg Call.
Yeah.
Her father, Mr. Greenberg, is actually a high-ranking engineer at Raytheon Technologies.
Wow.
Who actually, of course, makes weapons of mass destruction. So I think it's especially salient that this young woman would stand up as she's doing and leave her budding career. She's only 26 years old, to stand up for her beliefs.
She's calling out her boss, her president of the United States, Joe Biden, and she's also actually calling out her father while she's doing that, talking about the war machine. Nothing says war machine like Raytheon, by the way. It's interesting. Must make for some real interesting Thanksgiving dinner conversations at the Greenberg family household. By the way, the big talk worldwide is the ICC, as we've been reporting this week, announcing the arrest for Benjamin Netanyahu for war crimes, the killing of 40,000 people and suspected genocide, as they say. And guess who's for it? This is fascinating. France and the government of Emmanuel Macron. He seems to be breaking ranks with NATO by supporting the ICC on this. However, France does not get a pass when it comes to its own colonialism. And let me tell you why. This is a story that's been on the radar for us this week. France has a territory in the Pacific Ocean. It's called New Caledonia. It's like an island, right? Small. But the people there want independence. But because they've discovered a ton of nickel there, which is what is used on our iPhones, etc., France does not want to give up New Caledonia. And that is why there are now riots in New Caledonia. Here's the pictures. Take a look. Yeah, look at this. This has been people who have been essentially coming out all week long. They have been burning cars. They have been starting fires. There have been attacks. There have been some deaths. So why are they angry? Well, they have enough votes to force out the French. But knowing that, you know what Macron did? He's exporting more French citizens to go move onto the island so they can vote against the natives, and he's changing the laws so that they will be able to vote. And that is why these people there who are protesting and who are burning stuff are so furious about this. You know what this is? Colonialism dies hard, doesn't it, Manila?
Yes. And Rick, one thing before we touch on New Caledonia, I want to make a correction because I think it's important. And I think this show is one of the few shows that will make corrections if we say something wrong. I got the family names mixed up on Miss Lily
Greenberg Call.
Greenberg Call. Her father is Thomas Call, a senior chief engineer at Raytheon. And her mother is actually a famous Broadway producer, theater producer named Amy Greenberg. So I want to correct the record there before anyone tries to fact check us and say we got that wrong.
The Greenberg is maternal and the Call is paternal. Thank you so much for clearing that up.
Correct. And now the New Caledonia thing, speaking of paternal, right? Can you get more paternal than France and their continued colonial empire that they are, you know, say they've abandoned, you know, here and there from the 1960s and 1970s? Obviously, that's well before Emmanuel Macron's time. But what we're seeing here in New Caledonia, I don't think necessarily is a move for France for the sake of France.
No.
I think it's actually a move for the sake of the United States as the U.S. and China continue to kind of spar over space in the influence in the space of that area down by Australia, where this island is. Mm-hmm. I think Emmanuel Macron is actually trying to play interference here. We'll use football terminology in order for the U.S. to gain dominance in that region. So I don't think it's necessarily for France.
I think it has a lot to do with the nickel, too. I think the future of the world is dependent, as it used to be, on oil, and somewhat still is. Yeah, exactly. Everything having to do with the things that are going to operate our EVs and our phones, et cetera. And when they discover something, a mineral like nickel, on your country, all of a sudden all the European countries are like, oh, we weren't interested in the past, but we most certainly are now. You know what I mean? It's like, let's get in there. This New Caledonia, where is it? Who cares? Let's get it. thanks so much. We appreciate it, Manila. When we come back, Russia's destroying Ukraine's army and NATO is in a panic. Who said that? Our next guest did. He's a military and naval analyst. His name is Andrei Martyanov, and he's going to be good enough to join us here in just a little bit. Stay with us.
We need to counter the Russian state-controlled narrative.
Als Teil der Sanktionen gegen Russland gehen die westlichen Länder gegen russische Auslandssender vor.
Mais écoutez, monsieur, c'est pas à vous de décider de qui est journaliste ou pas dans ce pays. On est en France, quoi, c'est pas possible.
We will ban in the European Union the Kremlin's media machine. The state-owned Russia Today and Sputnik.
RT, Sputnik, even our video agency, roughly all banned on YouTube.
Et merci à vous tous pour votre fidélité et votre soutien.
welcome back. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact. Let me introduce you to military and naval analyst Andre Martyanov, who's good enough to join us now because he has been writing and thinking a lot about this incredibly unique relationship between NATO, the United States, Ukraine, and Russia. And he thinks NATO is really being short shrifted in this deal. It is revealing itself for what it is. And what would you say it is, Andre?
Yeah, it's my pleasure to be here.
Thank you.
With you. It's paper tiger, if we kind of, you know, omit any kind of the formalities here. And militarily, European NATO is really not modern and capable force. And there is much to this incapability or impotence, let's put it this way, because it is based on the economic impotence and the process of the steady deindustrialization and the generation of the old institutions, which usually support the nation's defense policies and procurement policies. And you cannot talk about such places like Germany or Italy as any kind of military power, and even France, if you remove its indigenous, so to speak, native, if you wish, nuclear deterrent, militarily they are pipsqueak, they are third rate.
So what
they
happens?
Cannot,
So that's fascinating, and I love the choice of word pipsqueak, by the way. I haven't heard that in a while. That's from our generation. That's one of those words where my kids, when I use that word, they always look at me and say, Dad, that's one of those old words nobody understands anymore. But I think it's right on point. And I think part of what you're saying is, as we watch what's going on right now in Ukraine, Ukraine is being supported by NATO. Ukraine is using NATO's weapons. Ukraine is using NATO's hardware, their technology. And who's winning? And how big are they winning? And I think, like, the proof is in the pudding, right? To use another term from our generation.
Yeah, it's, and many people still do not understand because they all graduated the School of Advanced Military Studies by Hollywood and the movie Patton, that war is necessarily just running into some kind of the mileage or capturing territory. No. And the question here is very simple. If you are, remember the famous one-liner from Clausewitz: the any object of aim of war is to make the to force the enemy, to compel the enemy to do our will. And you can do it by just simply eliminating his economic and military potential. And this is exactly what Russia doing and is doing. And their core of this thing is to elimination of the mobilizational or personnel issue for armed forces of Ukraine. And when you consider the actual number, not which is given by the Russian Defense Ministry, because it is very conservative, and Russian Defense Ministry provides numbers only which it can see and it can count, we're looking somewhere between 1 million killed in action in Ukraine and another million maimed. Yes. So this is kind of middle of the road. So, and that means that what we have already now, just to give you an example, a few days ago, one Russian soldier has been taken prisoner of war by four Ukrainian soldiers in the cellar of the house. Because he went there slightly, being slightly wounded, he wanted to bandage himself, and there they were. So they took him prisoner. After 20-minute talk, he took them prisoners and basically took them and promised them that they won't be exchanged as prisoners of war to Ukraine. They wanted to stay, you know, in Russia. So, and this is documented, and the guy took them, you know, after that to the Russian lines. And that tells you the morale, or morale, if you wish, of the Ukrainian troops. There are still some formations like fanatical Nazis. But if you even look at the fanatical Nazis, such as Azov or Kraken Brigades or whatever they left of those units, they are not in rush to fight on the, you know, Russians.
So if
they are good at, you know.
So let me ask you then, because I'm fascinated by what you're saying, and I didn't know that number was a million, and I'm glad you quoted that for us. If that's the case, if the Ukrainian military is decimated, as you say it is, and not just in terms of its physical strength, but also its moral strength, then that would mean that Russia could pretty much run roughshod through Ukraine. Why don't they? Why isn't Russia, for example, already in Odessa? Why hasn't Russia already taken a little bit more of the north around Kharkov, et cetera, even though I know that they're doing so? It seems like they're going slowly. Why?
Yeah, because in the end, you have to demilitarize. And demilitarization means annihilation of the, and it sounds horrible. But if you consider the casualties, I mean, Ukraine will have nobody to fight against Russia, and reducing the human pool, which can, conduct some kind of the diversionary and sabotage actions after it's all done and over. Hmm. But then you have to keep in mind also, Russia is not really in terms of the gaining territory. It never was the point. If you look even at the Istanbul negotiations in 2022, it wasn't about gaining new territories. It was about Russia's security and demilitarizing Ukraine, reducing its military potential. Now it has been gone pretty much. So how it's going to proceed from there in terms of partitioning, which is going to happen. It's all about up to Kremlin to make a decision of what Russia is going to gain in terms of the already territories, which we know are already part of Russia, which are those four regions, such as Zaporizhia, Kherson, Donetsk, and Lugansk. So will Russia take Kharkov? Possibly, but Russia is not going to go there and, you know, create a grouping of 200,000 personnel to take this city, which will obviously involve the horrendous number of the civilian casualties.
Yeah.
So Russia is in the force economy mode and doesn't want to, you know, just kill those own people unnecessarily.
That's fascinating. It's fascinating talking to you. You seem to have a real understanding of what the Russian strategy or MO is in this situation. Do you think, I mentioned Odessa because it's almost like finishing the circle, sort of, or the half circle, sort of speak. It would be creating that buffer so that they control the maritime lanes. Do you think at some point Odessa will fall to the Russian military if there is no truce? If Zelensky does not come to the table, will Russia go there?
Well, Zelensky is not going to come to the table. He was declared the wanted person, and Mr. Medvedev 2 days ago was pretty explicit in explaining his fate. Hmm. He is either going to be on the, under the tribunal for war crimes in Ukraine, or he is going to be eliminated. He is not a legitimate president anymore. He is a dictator now. Hmm. And by the way,
let me explain to viewers what you just said. He was supposed to be reelected. There was supposed to be an election right about now, and they've canceled the election, which means he is now the president of a country, even though he has not been the elected president of the country, which is why you use the word dictator. Continue, please.
No, I mean, Odessa eventually will return to to Russia because it's a Russian city. It was founded by Russians, it was built by Russians. So it's during Catherine the Great. And so eventually it's going to happen. How it's going to happen, I'm obviously not in the general staff of Russia, so right. I don't know. But I'm sure there are plans to take it at some point of time.
So by the way, I think we're running out of time, but I'm so curious. So the U.S. gives them, what was the number, 650,000 or 65 billion dollars more, or $75 billion more, whatever the number is, it doesn't matter. What are they going to do with all of that equipment if they don't have soldiers to use it and to fight? I don't understand that. Do you?
Well, you have to ask those great military planners in Pentagon and State Department. Those people don't understand what modern war is. They never knew to start with. And considering the American war record, which are primarily losses, and the United States never fought the real serious combined arms operation of scale against a potent enemy. So, they live in those, you know, Top Gun movies, and they think that, you know, if you wish and throw more money, somehow it's going to happen. It's not going to happen. War is a very complex business, but most people when you look at the background of those people who planned it, Very few military professionals are there. And even those military professionals, you have to understand, Russians are not taking it any more seriously. They know that United States can create mayhem. But if you read professional media, professional media, such as Parameters, you know, Joint Force Quarterly and things like that, the mood there is actually much more realistic than what they put into the mass media in the United States and in the West.
Yeah.
And United States simply is not in the same league militarily, both hardware-wise and let alone operationally, because it simply has no experience.
Yeah, it seems, it seems in fact, like this situation and the push by Washington has actually improved Russia's military while it's also improved its economy. What a strange thing. I would never have said that 2.5 years ago, and here we are talking about it on TV, and so are even Western analysts. Andrey Martynov, you are a delight to talk to. Thank you, sir, for sharing some of your wisdom with us. We appreciate it. Let's do it again, okay?
Sure. My pleasure, Drake.
That's our show. Remember, always look outside your own box. Truths don't live in boxes. I'm Rick Sanchez. Thanks so much for being with us, and we'll look for you again soon.